Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
So we drink in the presence. We've just chanted, God is my source. God is my power. God gives me everything I need. So I give thanks for all my blessings. And in that, I arrive. In this sacred place of gratitude. Today we're going to take the first step on this eternal practice. And we get to discern what that first step would be. We can make an affirmation. God is my source. God is my power. God gives me everything I need. And that may be the first step. Or the first step might be, thank you. When I give thanks for the day that I've been given, well then, however messy that day might be, however imperfect it might be, by giving thanks for that day, I claim the blessing. And so the first step is always a surprise. I hear Carole King, you've got to get up every morning with a smile on your face and show the world all the love in your heart, and people gonna treat you better. They're gonna smile, yes they will, 'cause you're beautiful, you're beautiful. Just because I smiled and I greeted the world with love in my heart, is that the first step, Michael? Or is the first step to wake up next to a pug snoring by your heart chakra and feel the love of this little compromised animal, reminding me that we're here to walk each other home, to love what life has presented to us, and it's all here for us, every bit of it. And so with that realization, I invite you to open your eyes, and maybe that's the first step. I once was blind, but now I can see. I can see clearly now. The idiot's gone. I can see all the obstacles that were in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. Because I can see now, it's going to be a bright, 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 sunshiny day. What if the whole purpose of the darkness is to reveal the light? I was sharing with Adam, I got the Science of Mind magazine this month, and it's all about the shadow and the light. And it's one article after another, how the shadow is being revealed so that we can heal. So if there is anything in your life that isn't copacetic, that isn't in harmony, invite it to reveal itself to you so that it has the potential to be healed. So then what we call a problem really is not a problem. It turns into an opportunity for it to be met with equanimity and to see a pattern that might be unconscious within us. That's why the Ernest Holmes class, This Thing Called You, is like having a 2x4 slap you. In chapter 10, I guess did it for a few of you out there, when Ernest Holmes says, we're reprogramming our consciousness, and we've been programmed to judge, to say there's not enough. And you know, if you say to the universe there's not enough, what do you think you're going to manifest in the mirror of life? Not enough. But if you wake up and you say, all the good, all the God has already been given to me, well, then you're going to walk out your door and you're going to see the good, the God everywhere. Even the little bird that's nesting in your house, he's part of the equation. And guess what, Terry boy? The chipmunks have come back, and I love my chipmunks. I just love them. They're so cute. They run between my legs. And yes, a few plants are compromised, but I can tie the few plants to the universe so that the chipmunks with their little stripes can make me feel better about what I've done to their cousins, the rats and the mice. So it's all so subjective, isn't it? And so I love to create a theme for the month and then let that theme build upon itself. And the theme for this month is the eternal practice. We never arrive at this final destination where you don't have to do any more practicing. And Marilyn Ferguson that said, the spiritual journey is a lifelong endeavor with no final destination. So you don't arrive and then you say, oh, I'm a Dr. Reverend David. No, you don't. I am still that humble student who sits by the garden wall and tries to get the lesson from the smallest of things. And so what if we all get to do Reiki with the earth, Miss Emily, but then we realize that the earth is doing Reiki on us? And then you lie down in the field and you're being held by the mother, and all of a sudden she gave you the gift of chiggers. And you think, oh, am I going to hate the mother because there's a few chiggers? Or am I going to be mindful about where I lie down and maybe have respect for all the poor chiggers that had my healthy body lying on top of them? I must have squished a few. It's all perception. The way you look at things is what you experience, not the thing itself. So in this endless practice, we're always working on ourselves to cleanse the lens of our perception and to see that it's all our own self, that we're not separate from one another. I love bringing in science with spirituality, and I'm enamored of the book, The Story of Gaia. It's a great big thick book by this PhD from Oxford. And when I read it, I feel like she's giving me the bigger picture of the more. And she talks about we need to move from the me person into the we and ultimately into the all that is. So there is no me. And then on my Zen calendar this morning, it was so amazing. It was talking about the teachings on Buddhism. And it said in Buddhism, they recognize that the only problem we have in this world is the egoic perception of me. Because when there's a me, then there's a mine. And then there is my beliefs, my opinions, my judgments. And this can lead, in this Buddhist teaching, this can lead to evil, because then the me that's in charge can judge the other as separate. And then you get this presentation of separation, what is acceptable. And as disturbing as that was to read this morning, could we be willing to sacrifice the me on the altar of the we? And could we ultimately be willing to sacrifice the me on the altar of the all? So that it's all you. Trey has decided that Saturday nights we need to watch something inspiring. And so he calls it Brit Box Movie Night. And he found this movie from 20 years ago, and I don't remember the name of it, but it was based on the story of the woman, Lawrence Durrell, the Durrells in Corfu. And I had a mystical experience at 21 in Corfu. And so the place holds a dear place in my heart. That's where I was completely lost, and I found the one in here. And I remember this young man gave me a quote, and it said, in oneself lies the whole world. No, he gave me the quote that said, be like the bird who, pausing for a while on boughs too slight, this is Victor Hugo, feels them give way beneath her, yet she sings knowing she hath wings. And at that particular time, everything had fallen away, and something in me took wing, took flight. And it was the turning around. And so in this Saturday night movie, the Durrells go to, and Gigi, you've got to see this, they go to Corfu right when Hitler's coming to power. So they flee England. They go to Corfu thinking she'll protect her four children. She's a single mother. But you can't escape something that is going to happen. And they found that out later. They had to finally leave Greece and go back to England because the war had started. But prior to that, she fled England, went to Corfu, and she has these four radical children. The oldest son fancies himself as an author, and he's very erudite. The pretty 15-year-old girl, she is pretty as a picture, and she wants to wear two-piece bathing suits, and the Greek men are drooling, and she's happy, and the mother is beside herself, thinking, oh, my poor daughter, she's gone astray, and she's swimming with all the Greek men in their two-piece bikini. And the third child, he's gun-happy, and he shoots everything. He's shooting the animals, and the mother, he's bringing dead animals home because he's shooting, and he's shooting, and he's got his arsenal of guns. That's her third child. And being the wonderful mother, she gives her children space to be who they are. But the youngest of these four children reminded me of Adam, because this little boy, he's maybe 10, Lawrence Durrell, he became the writer that wrote about it. He finds bugs. He finds baby magpies. And he takes them all as his pets. He finds a baby turtle. And the turtle becomes his pet. The magpies are sitting on his shoulders. He's got every critter, whereas the brother's shooting all the critters in Corfu. The younger brother is saving every single one. And so I'm seeing this crazy show about a family trying to figure out how we fit in into this world. And, you know, it all boiled down to letting people unfold in their own unique way, in a loving expression. And the little boy helped them realize that all these many, many critters that they were finding in Corfu that they'd never seen before were all part of themselves. Even the little bugs became sacred. And so in this wonderful movie, tears are coming down, not out of an act of weakness, but out of a sense of gratitude that the little boy was there to have the family wake up to our interconnectedness, that it's all good, it's all God, and it's all here for us. So, of course, you had to have a sad moment. His baby turtle fell down the well, and he's just bereft, and they find the baby turtle, and they bring him up from the well. And the next thing you know, the family is standing around a hole, and they're lowering this box covered with flowers into the hole as they're saying a prayer for the little turtle, who is still with us in spirit, but he's no longer in form. Could a silly little movie be something that is here to open our heart so that we begin to see things differently? Now, what if that's what it all is? It's all here to help us wake up and see that we're connected to the one life. The first Sunday of the month of April, I spoke about tending our garden. And I used a reference to Voltaire's Candide, when he searched the whole world for himself and he finally arrived back at the little village in France where he started out. And he came to the realization, and it's all about, what do you realize now, Dorothy? Never look any further than your own backyard, because if it isn't there, you've never lost it to me. Well, that's it. But you have to make the great discovery for yourself. So Voltaire, having traveled the whole world over, came to the simple realization, I guess we're just here to tend our own garden. So how does your garden grow? We had a cleanup day here yesterday. And I got here early, and I was looking at that wisteria, and I'm thinking it's choking the tree out. And I could either have a mindset I'm going to battle with the wisteria, or I could open my heart compassionately. I'm here to relieve the tree from its the oppression and the choking embrace of that. And so Kelly came, and she was going to help relieve me. And I said, now we can either attack the vine, or we can embrace the tree. And you know, it's all how you see it. So once we just took a loving hand, this was all an act of love. It wasn't an act of, oh, you bad plants, get out of here with a sickle and a scythe. No, thank you for being here and providing beauty. Jean Ann was amazing because I planted this sweet autumn clematis. It's a perennial clematis that's fragrant. Usually they're not, but it's invasive. And it's growing up the trees, it's growing up over the gazebo, it's traveled over here and yon. And I said, as much as you're a beautiful plant, you're not wanted here. You can grow in other places. And so you have a relationship with plants, with animals, with trees, with your neighbors. It's kind of harder to do it with the humans. It's easier to do it sometimes with the garden. But what does tending your garden look like in your life? After I got done here, you know, it's all how you see things. If you wake up in the morning, my little oracle on my phone, I've got the thing down here. Anyway, it said, if you wake up and you say, I have everything I need in my life, I am so well provided for, well then, all you see is more. But if you wake up and say, you know, there's never enough, this place is a mess, the garden needs to be weeded, the closets need to be cleaned out, all you're going to see are projects and things that need to be done. So what if it's how you see things? So I get home after the cleanup, I'm feeling high. Trey went out to the store and bought all these impatiens, and he wanted me to finish the garden. So as tired as I was, individually I put each one in its sacred place, and I said, I'm done, you want to take a look at it? And so the curb is just beautiful, there's ground cover, there's impatiens. It's just really nice, and he says, you didn't get all the weeds out. I said, you know, I've been working to plant these beautiful gardens, and all you see are the weeds. And he says, well, you got to get the weeds first before you... And so I said, okay, thank you for sharing. It's all perception. Two men looked out of a prison cell. One saw stars, the other saw mud. What are you seeing? In that beautiful article on the shadow side, there was a testimony from a man in prison. He's in, I think it's San Quentin. He's sentenced to life imprisonment, but he has a practitioner, Mary Beth Spears, and he stays in touch with her. And he wrote this journal entry, and they put it in the Science of Mind magazine. And he was stuck in solitary confinement. And he's up there, and he's looking out of the prison window, and he sees the gates to the courtyard at San Quentin opening, and there is a little bird who's trying to nest on the gate. And he's saying, oh, you don't want to nest there because the gate opens and closes and it's precarious. But the bird decided it was going to nest there anyway. So he watched as the gate would open. The nest seemed to sustain itself. The eggs were there. And the next thing is he's looking out of solitary confinement. One of the eggs hatches. And it's a little, he calls the little bird Little Hawk. And so he's from his prison cell, he's having a relationship with this bird. And I'm reading this article from this prisoner in the prison cell, and he's feeling the love from the bird. And he was making gestures in the window, and the bird was kind of doing things like this. And so he gets out of solitary confinement. Remember, he's a lifer. He's down in the courtyard where they go in prisons. And all of a sudden, a bird lands right next to him. And he says, Little Hawk, is that you? And he starts to do his little thing, and the bird does his little thing, and of course I'm crying reading this silly little article from this prisoner in the thing. Just by opening his heart to this divine creature in a nest, he was seen by the bird, and he took it as a confirmation from the universe that I'm valued, that I'm seen, if Little Hawk can see me and let me know. And so little things like that come into our experience so that we can say that the universe is showing us how it's always a beginning. So I talked about retending the garden the next week, Tia, and this is, I think, impregnated you, the idea that it's always a beginning. We're always beginning every day. You got to wake up in the morning. Are you going to put a smile on your face and give them all the love in your heart? Or are you going to wake up with an attitude? And sometimes you do. You know, sometimes you're pissed off and you wake up and you have to go out. But you know what gets you out of that pissosity? Take a walk with a blind pug in a stroller. All these girls that start, that squeaky little voice that girls make, and he's so cute, and they come running over and they say, is he friendly? And I just give them the experience of loving a deaf, blind pug, and he just loves it. So they're making love to him, and he's just allowing it. You know, he's a Zen. He says, well, you know, a little hawk can do it. I guess I can do it. You know, they're desperate. They need some love, and I'm here to offer it. And so then you wonder, who is the giver and who's the receiver? Is the giver the one that's fussing over the little thing? Or is the giver the one who's sitting there and allowing people to fuss all over them? Just like, who is the hero over there? Is it those two beautiful souls? Or is it Bruce who sits between them, stretched in smiling repose? The presence of the one who doesn't judge, who doesn't have attitude, who never rejects. And then you begin to see life. Could I begin this day with a new way of embracing this morning? It's so nice to see the diversity here we have at the center. And in that book, The Story of Gaia, she says, the universe started off in unity consciousness. Then, the second phase in our evolution, she says, we evolved into unity in diversity. So the one created the many. It's the Tao that became the 10,000 things. But she said, in the third phase, and she called it the Trinity of Being, she linked in a spiritual concept with a scientific realization. In the Trinity, the third phase is when, she says, unity consciousness sees through the diversity. So unity consciousness was looking through Little Hawk. Unity consciousness is looking through Humphrey the Pug. Your little cat Mia was unity consciousness, taking care of the two of you. And that mistake is we think we're taking care of them, but the irony is they're taking care of us. And it's just a whole different way of seeing. So that's the beginning, to begin to see in a new way. What was the third week? That was last week. I wrote it down here. Oh, we're here to be here. We're not here to be in the days when things were better. We're not here to be in a future when things might be better. We're here to be fully present in whatever the moment has given us. And sometimes those moments can be crazy. And we get to say, okay, this is the moment the Lord has made. As messy as it is, as imperfect as it is, and I'm going to rejoice and be glad in it. That's going to be my first step, to be here right now. So in continuation of this thing is, today is about taking that first step. What would that first step be? And of course, Thich Nhat Hanh came into my mind because the teachers are always there. Thich Nhat Hanh, when I saw him in the year 2000, he said, the miracle is not to walk on water like Jesus was reputed to do, or to walk on fire with all those fire walking things. He says, the true miracle is to walk on this earth where every step is a blessing to this beautiful mother who is here to take care of us, as Emily said, and she's saying, you can trust me. Now, what if that could be our first step, is to embrace this beautiful earth who serves us, who feeds us, who is our mother? And then you begin to discover your cosmic reality. You're made out of star stuff, and you're made out of earth. Now, doesn't that make you feel part of all of it, instead of this separate, hubris, kind of egoic person? It's so funny, in our class on Emerson, he talked about the fallacies of organized religion. He took great joy in that. And one of the things that he found crazy about the way we look at things is that we consider the human species the superior species. And he said, if you look at the royalty and some of those who've risen to that high order of being, like the czars and the czarinas and the oligarchs and all those, he says, that is not a very evolved place to be. So he was kind of poking fun at what we think is the evolution of humanity, when truly it's about stripping away the idea that I am superior into the, as St. Francis, why would God choose you to have his word made manifest? And St. Francis, in his humility, he says, because God could find no more lowly sinner than myself. So he found the darkness, it revealed the light. So could we play with this emerging evolution? And it's going to do it uniquely for each one of us. It's not going to be anything off the rack. Barry is unique in every way, and it's going to be unique for Barry. It's going to be unique for Miriam. It's going to be unique for Tia. And God, dare I say, it's going to be unique for this individual. God knows, who am I? And then you live in that existential question, who am I? Maybe that's the first step. Am I David Leonard, the one who's evolved and grown and has all these damn degrees? Or am I the emptiness? Am I the nothingness? Am I the peace and the love that doesn't need David? Adam and I were talking about birth and death and how we've got this idea that death is the ending, but really, what if death is the birth? And when you die to this false sense of self, the me person, well, then the possibility, and in Tia's beautiful treatment, she says, beloved, 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 because then the lover becomes the beloved. It's all the beloved. And yes, we seem to be separate. Michael and I aren't really separate. Michael's sitting there, David's sitting here. But when Michael and I met in the beloved, we were with our two crazy dogs who needed love, and they came to teach us. So what if life gives you these lessons so that we can evolve and grow out of the me who thinks he's special and separate into the we who knows we're all connected? It's that connection that brings us together, and then ultimately to the all, that it's all our family, it's all our relations, every bit of it. And then we get to play. Next week on the final talk of this eternal practice, guess what the title is? You're going to love this, Phil. It's called, what is it called? Oh, I'm looking forward to it. Oh, Endlessly Surprised. You will be surprised when you move to Alabama from Colorado. You aren't going to know what you're going to get. You're going to get chiggers. You're going to get mosquitoes. You're going to get lightning bugs. We have lightning bugs. And you're going to get some crazy people who carry guns. And that's just what they do here. They carry guns. But we know guns don't kill people. Or do they? I don't know. But you have to learn to think for yourself. You know, the question came up in our revealing service. Is Alabama the place that all these evolved beings need to grow? And I think the realization was, yeah, Alabama needs us and we need her too, so that she can evolve and get to know people like us and not be afraid of us, because we're different. I'm very different. Barry and Miriam are different. Aren't they beautiful? They're full expressions of who they are. They don't have to hide under a bushel. They can let their light shine. So what if that's the invitation? The first step is to just accept where we are. This is the day the Lord has made, and I'm going to rejoice and be glad in it. I went to the gardener, my little oracle. This is from a Spanish poet. And he was asked, people come to the gardener. I like to think of myself as a gardener, because they want enlightenment. And he's the enlightened gardener. And it's so funny because it's so simple. So this very wealthy man comes to the gardener near the end of the book, and he says, I want to know the shortest path to happiness. And he says, What is the shortest path so I can feel happy? A man who is wealthy and unaccustomed to working asked the humble gardener. We all want to know that, don't we? And the gardener says, always say thank you. It's that simple. And the man said, always say thank you to life for everything that it gives us? And the wealthy man smiled arrogantly. And he says, well, I can't say thank you to something that I'm not grateful for. How could I possibly do that? This thing is making me miserable. I'm living here. And doesn't it seem to you that if it was as easy as that everybody would be happy? Asked the wealthy man. If it's that easy to just say thank you, that'll make me happy. And the gardener's listening to him patiently, Michael. And he says, oh, no, it's not easy, answered the gardener. To be able to be thankful for even the pain that life bequeaths on us, it's not easy. It's not easy sometimes to say thank you. But there's wisdom there. Then that can't be the shortest path, said the man. It just can't be. And I'm not sure he stomped his foot. To which the gardener, in his quiet way, said, well, which is the shortest path to climb up a mountain? The gardener asked the man. Is it not across the land that leads directly from where you are to the tippy top of the mountain? He said, well, yes, of course, says the rational, wealthy man. And is that path not, the gardener continued, more difficult to cover than the path that makes and goes up a mountain little by little? Well, yes, I suppose, he says. So the gardener says the shortest path is always the most difficult one, and only the strong and the brave can traverse it. Only the strong and brave can take that simple path of giving thanks for everything. So on Saturday, to confirm that, on the Zen calendar was Tara Bach. She says the same thing the gardener did in one sentence. She says, there is something wonderfully bold and liberating that you can say, and that word is yes. I might add yes, thank you. Say yes to your entire imperfect and messy life. With even a glimmer of that possibility, in that moment, joy will rush in. When you say, yes, my life is a mess right now. Yes, I'm pissed off right now. And once you say yes to it and you meet it, that's the revealing to be healed. Well, then she says a lovely, what does she call it? The possibilities and joy rush in. So could I meet the stuff in life that isn't comfortable and say yes? Maybe cleaning up the church. I came in with resistance thinking I was going to go to war with the wisteria. And then when Kelly came, I realized I'm making love to the trees. And what started as a war became a love affair. And when we left here, I felt all the love that went into that action. So this morning was Marcus Aurelius on the Zen calendar. And I'm asking for the universe to tell me, what is the first step? So what do you think Marcus Aurelius, this mystic from 2,000 years ago, said? He says, when you arise in the morning, think to yourself, what a privilege it is to be alive, to be grateful. You know, Adam was told when he had the stroke that he would be a vegetable. And Tia said, no, he won't. He will be able to get up and he will be strong. I was told I had the Widowmaker. I wasn't going to survive. So here we are. Now, if two people ever should say, I'm grateful to be alive, it's the two of us. So when you arise in the morning, say what a privilege it is to be alive, Marcus Aurelius. What a privilege it is to breathe. What a privilege it is to think for ourselves and not have somebody else think for you. And what a privilege it is to enjoy the life that we've been given and the love that is all around us and within us. So could we embrace the life that we've been given, even as compromised and as messy as it is? You think that's the first step, Phil, to just embrace the life that you're given? I don't know. That's what the gardener says. Yeah. So I was seeking more validation, and I pulled out the latest hot off the press, The Master Teacher Within You, James Twyman. And it's truly an oracle for me. And he tells story after story after story. And in his mind, the first step is to enter the kingdom of heaven. He's quoting Jesus. Seek ye first the kingdom of heaven, and everything else will be added unto you. And then he says, I saw a cartoon in the New Yorker magazine. And in that cartoon, they had workshop for the kingdom of heaven. And people were lined up around the block. And then right there in the next section of the cartoon, kingdom of heaven, the gate was open. And he said, you go right into the kingdom. You don't need to take another workshop to get there. It's right now. So what if we could, the first step is to go. What is the kingdom? That's the consciousness of oneness, the kingdom of heaven. That's the peace that passes all understanding. What is the kingdom of heaven? That's an unconditional love for all. So what would be the kingdom of heaven for you? It would be the great thank you for life. Oh my God. So here's how he ended the book. I would take you to the ending because it's kind of good. You don't have to read the big book. He says, say yes to love and watch as your life transforms in ways that you could never have imagined. Say yes to love. At the very beginning, I quoted a poem that he wrote. And in that poem that he wrote at the very beginning, he ended it with, there is a holy breath where light comes with love to set us free. There is a holy breath when light comes, the light of your being, with love to set us free. When light and love come together, they set us free of judgment, of opinion, of criticism, of confusion, of worry, of doubt, of fear. When light comes with love, it sets us free. Who does it set you free from? Well, I think it's from you. Isn't the only one that could bind you, you? But then again, you're the only one that can free you. And then is it really you that frees you? Or is it your willingness? And here Ernest Holmes, the first step came from chapter 10, Phil. You know what Ernest said? He says, you can choose, but you can't outline. Well, now there's a little light bulb moment. What are you choosing? Choose you this day. Are you going to choose to come from the true self? Or are you going to choose to be the little whiny self? Only the finite self wails and suffers. Are you going to choose to be him? You can. And you can whine and wail and really get stop your little feet. Or are you going to choose to enter into your true nature, which is emptiness? And what are you empty of? You're empty of the me person. And yet you're filled with the beloved. You're filled with the interconnectedness of the trees and the birds. And then you can sing to them and they'll sing back to you. And you can Reiki them and they'll Reiki you. And you realize, I guess we're not different. I guess there's only one here. And all that happened was I loved everything. I didn't. So he goes on to say yes to love and watch as your life transforms in ways that you could never have imagined. So here's his last little poem from the big book. In the end, words fall short of love's embrace. For love speaks for itself in every space. It is the answer to life's deepest quests, the force that holds the universe at rest. With love as the essence of who you are, your questions find answers that heal and star. It binds us all like a powerful glue, transforming our life into a world that's new. Into a world that's what, Tia?
New.
Thank you. So say yes to love in every way. And watch now as it guides you day by day. And with true love as your guide, you'll never, ever stray. For this love is the path to the eternal way. So we're taking a path home into the kingdom of heaven that's already there. And we just take a conscious breath and we say, I have arrived. I am home. I look through light with love and I set myself free of all the self-inflicted nonsense of the little mind that would have me worry and fret and judge and condemn it. That just falls away. Adam was talking about the veils falling away, and he did a reference to that in our revealing service. In the Sufi tradition, they say there are 70,000 veils of ignorance that keep us blind in this idea of ourselves. They say to liberate the soul, you have to lift the veils and make sure you do it one at a time and that you do not tear the veils. Well, that sounds like a mighty long process, doesn't it? Until one day the veils just fall away, and that thing that you were looking through that was the you person, it's somehow he's in the balcony and he's realizing and then of course Ernest Holmes says you lose yourself to find yourself. He's saying the same thing. We lose the false self to awaken to the higher self. So I'm going to read this one more time. In the end, words fall short of love's embrace. For love speaks for itself in every space. My little friend Jake Ward, he sends me photographs of him listening to my Sunday talks. He watches it on YouTube. And he says, Maisie and I are listening to you this Sunday. And there he is lying in his bed. And Maisie's lying on the side with her head on his chest. And they're watching me. And I'm thinking, this is love. Lying in a bed with your pup. And then drinking the love that I'm... So, for love speaks for itself in every space. It is the answer to life's deepest quests. The force that holds the universe at rest. Could we open to the love of the universe? You know, how many gardeners are out there? Oh, a few of you. How many people have bird feeders out there? Oh, more of you. Do you feel the love when you put the bird seat out in the bird feeder, or when the birds sit at the window and say, the suet feeder's empty? Do you feel love when you water a plant that's bent over and all of a sudden it sits up and looks happy? What if there's so many opportunities to experience our interconnectedness with love and to know that it's this love that's bigger than us? And then you think you're serving them, but they're serving you. It's this kind of dual way of thinking. The universe at rest with love as the essence of who you are. Your questions find answers that heal and star. Your questions find answers through love. So what would love do in this situation? It binds us all like a powerful glue. Do you feel the love in this room? You know, when we do the revealing services, there's so much love in that circle. It's a love that binds us like glue, that holds us together. Transforming our lives into a world that's new. What kind of world to you? A world that's new. So then endings are beginnings. And then a death is really a birth. And could we be willing to die to that which needs to die in a metaphorical way so that we can give birth to that emerging sense of oneness, that deeper love that knows no other, and be willing to have the transformation? This is a transformative teaching. Hopefully you're not going to come into it the way you come out of it. You know, when I came to this teaching in the 80s, I was a mess. I needed therapy. I was having midlife crises at 30, and I didn't have any money, didn't have the job, I didn't know what I was, I had too many degrees, couldn't afford a therapist, but I could afford to sit in the back row of a Center for Spiritual Living church, and I heard a message that my soul needed to hear, that I had created my own reality, and by changing the way I saw things, my whole life would change. And of course, it worked its alchemy on me, and here I'm sitting working the alchemy on all y'all. And to embrace the change, to embrace this change. So say yes to this annihilating love in every way. Rumi says, love is a fire and I am wood. Now, to think of love as a fire, and Rumi said, and my life can be boiled down to three phrases. I burned and I burned and I burned until all that left was me, of me, was ash. But he'd merged in the meantime with the love that knows no other. So could we know a love that's that powerful, that takes us into itself? So say yes to love in every way and watch as it guides you day to day. Hopefully it was love that had you drive here and shake that tambourine and rattle. Love that brought you here to experience your true nature by seeing it reflected in the eyes of each other, knowing that it's all your own self. So watch now as it guides you day by day, and with true love as your guide, you'll never ever stray. With true love as your guide. Take it into a question, because you know the mind is 10 times more active in a question, not with an answer. So how could I let love guide me today? Miriam was saying that she was driving down the street and she saw a squirrel in the street, or was it a cat, and she stopped because she didn't want to run over it. Now that was love guiding her, not to speed up, but to slow down and give that little critter time to waddle across the road to its own little place of repose. Could love guide us in ways that we don't even imagine? For this love is the path to an eternal stay. So step out of the shadows and into the light where the love shines and sets us free. Step out of the shadows and into the light where the love shines and sets us free. So, Mary, you want to ring the bell and I'll take us into a little closing meditation, and then we'll sing our song. And oh, sweet. You notice the soft touch that just made the bell. It's like she was loving the bell. Dong. It's called the mindfulness bell for a reason. When we're mindful, we are fully present in the moment. And we are in the observer self, witnessing what arises, witnessing the feelings. Sometimes there are patterns that we become aware of in a mindful way. And so as we sit long enough with whatever arises and say yes to it, Well, that's the first step in healing whatever it is that's revealing. And it has come to you in this holy instant of now to be healed. And so we give thanks for whatever it might be that's coming for us in this holy instant of now. Stepping out of the shadows, we can see the shadows clearly. We can see how they take us into a dark place. But when we step out of the shadow, we find the light is waiting for us to embrace us. And when we allow the light to merge with the love, well, then we set ourselves free. Love does the work through the light and sets us free. So perhaps the first step is to ring the bell and to stop, to look and listen, and to discover that the kingdom of heaven is waiting for us, right there, the center of our being, divine love. And so we take a sacred breath and we breathe into that space, that God space, that field of awareness, that love that Rumi says comes fully formed like the moonlight in the window. And that is what we are. It's amazing when you allow yourself to feel the depths of this love, you realize it has no agenda. It doesn't have a plan. It just shows up in its fullness, fully formed. And then the invitation is for us to use that love as a guiding principle. Dr. Ernest Holmes said, let love lead the way, and the law will make the way possible. And so we are begirt with spiritual laws that are always here supporting us, knowing it's done unto us as we believe. And so as we believe in a more expanded awareness of life, of truth, we begin to demonstrate that in the body of our experience. If we believe that life is a problem, that is a struggle, and that there's never enough, well, then the law will make that way possible for us by replicating it as our experience. And so we step back from this realization. And we are set free from a pattern that we become aware of just by becoming aware of it. It doesn't mean that we're not going to go back into the valley of the shadows of death, as they say in the 23rd Psalm. We just don't have to build a condo there. Yea, though I walk through these troubled times, thou art there with me. And I navigate with love's guidance, knowing that when I look through the eyes of love and light, I set myself free from the dark, shadowy patterns of the past. It's getting easier and easier as we know that we're not the doer, that Spirit's in charge, always has been, and that we are spiritual beings first and foremost having a human experience. And so we prioritize it. We allow Spirit to be in charge, this divine love. And we embrace our humanity with compassion and gentleness and playfulness, knowing that we are eternally surprised at how the universe sets us free. There's the song of the bird outside singing to you. Someone said the bird doesn't sing because it has a message to present to you. It sings because it has a song. So could we allow ourselves to sing our song in whatever way we choose to sing it? 'Cause you're beautiful as you feel. Thank you, Spirit, for showing up this Sunday morning to set us all free to be who we are. The one that knows no other. And in that, we bow to all our relations as our own self. Claiming the gift of this sweet awareness, I invite you to open your eyes. Put down your penguin if you're holding one. And let's come into a circle and we'll sing a little song. Oh, there's a basket in the back of the room. I forgot the collection. So if you brought something there, it's waiting for you.
Listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.